Hello, welcome to the Plus Future podcast with me, James Napal Singh. Today is a series of three podcasts where we're showcasing the new residences of the Hayama Residency in Japan. We're speaking to Christopher DeHarsh, who's a sculptor and a painter. And this is a typical coaching session. And as usual, I set out the coaching ground rules before we started. Let's get stuck in. So Chris, welcome to the Plus Future podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
What's showing up that's important for you today?
So in my artistic life, I think that I'm an artist in Brooklyn, and I think that I'm at this weird stage where I'm kind of like coming out of my shell in my mid-30s, and I'm like, I'm showing a little bit more and obviously doing this residency coming up. And I'm interested in sort of connecting the dots of my artistic past. And like, I've been trained in painting, but did sculpture for a long time. I'm coming back to painting and drawing techniques now. So sort of connecting those things is a big goal of mine. I think also just in general, meeting more people, networking, growing my practice, showing more, fostering more dialogues with other artists and art individuals is really important to me.
What does connecting the dots mean to you?
I think it means to me something like connecting things that seem disparate or contrasting or not cohesive in my mind in my artistic practice. So the sculpture and the painting seeming maybe like they want to be closer together, and maybe there's a way to do that. I'm searching for that.
So if we were going to get clarity on that connection, what would make this a useful conversation for you today?
I think clarity on that and making this a useful conversation would be something like getting a sense of a roadmap forward for where my career might go, where I want it to go, and just getting a roadmap for the smaller everyday picture of my studio practice and how to connect all these different techniques that I'm using.
So tell me, where are we now in your artistic practice?
Right now I have a bifurcated practice in a way where I do have this sculptural practice that I've been doing for a while, for almost a decade now, of plaster work and sort of these sculptures that do use the language of painting, but through a sculptural lens. And so I'm still doing that sort of work in the studio, a lot of mold making involved in there, rubber, plaster, stuff like that. And then I've recently, on my last residency in France a couple of years ago, started painting again, just, you know, painting and drawing and sort of enjoying that practice and those sets of techniques. And really just in the past 2 years have I had these two seemingly distinct practices, but under the same roof.
And you mentioned the roadmap and you're coming to Japan for your residency. What would success look like for you at the end of that residency if we have a roadmap in place?
Well, I set out some goals with my partner, Alicia, and I, who's also in the residency, and we collaborate on projects, and we've been taking a lot of photography together as part of our practices. You know, if I come out of this residency with 10 full camera rolls that I can bring back into the studio and make work from, make drawings and paintings from, that would be amazing. Embedding myself in culture and in the scenery is a big goal, and learning as much as I can while I'm there. And in that, like, sort of exploration, getting a sense of empathy with that environment, because I always like to find the nuance in new places.
You just expand on empathy. What do you mean by that?
I mean a sense of empathy I could have with a new environment and with the people in that environment and with an urban or a natural landscape there. Getting to know it, getting to know the intricacies of it, basically just walking around a lot and taking photos and observations. Yeah, absorbing as much as I can.
To what extent do you actually need a roadmap for that then?
That is less of the roadmap that I'm needing and more of, I want to create more excuses for those excursions and those learning processes, those learning moments for me. And I mean, Hayama is a big part of that, going to this residency, and I'm continuing to do that. But I think that for me, I would really like to, yeah, continue to have that practice, getting out of my comfort zone. And it's a hard thing for me, someone who's always in the studio alone and you know, sort of an anxious person and good with people, but, you know, doesn't always get out that much.
So going back to the roadmap, what are we actually looking for here in today's conversation?
I think that the roadmap should include continuing to create excuses for me to have these interactions with those environments. So getting more residencies, getting more opportunities and having the bandwidth to keep doing that.
What do you need to do in Hayama to get you there?
It's a big thing to just have the opportunity to come to a country on the other side of the world and get to have a chance to meet other artists and other art-minded people. And I think that meeting Dexter, meeting you, meeting other people in this environment is going to be great for creating new conversations.
So the residency is for 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
Walk me through each week what you want to do to get you to this roadmap.
Yeah, I think that we have a rough idea of what's happening. I think that the first week we're going to be primarily in Hayama and Tokyo. Hayama is very close to Tokyo, so it's, you know, we're going to probably zip into town a couple times. And then the week two and week three are sort of designated as our like excursion weeks. And we are planning to go around to different towns and different villages and have as many experiences as we can while still, you know, having enough time to sleep and draw and take photos and stuff like that. And then the last week is in Hayama and Tokyo, and that'll be the week of our show. We're having a 3-person show at Koki Arts in Tokyo that week.
And you mentioned that you're quite an anxious person who spends time by themselves in the studio, but you're good with people. What version of Chris would you like to present to the people that you meet in Japan?
I'd like to present a version of me that I think that the best version of me in an art context is during studio visits. I love to meet people and see them in their, you know, see artists in their natural habitat and vice versa and have other artists and art-minded people over. I think that it's intimate, it's exciting, it's getting to know someone on a aesthetic and philosophical level, which is exciting to me.
And how would that improve your practice for where you want to get to?
I think it gets me out of my own head. I think that it helps me obviously see other perspectives, which is good, but just see other people's reactions, other people's taste, other people's philosophies. I think that that's a great thing.
So we started off the conversation with you mentioning your practice with the sculptures and the paintings. How would it look like if you do get out of your head and actually say, there's no roadmap here, I just want to see where things go by meeting other people?
It's scary not to have a roadmap, right? But I think that sometimes you can find the most interesting things when you're lost or seemingly lost. And the discoveries there could be exciting, I think.
Which would work best for you?
I always like having a roadmap, but I think that in the studio, just in my own work, I choose not to have a roadmap, or I try not to. And when I do put a roadmap on it, it sort of becomes fussy or, yeah, contrived or something like that. So I think that maybe the best roadmap is one that allows for a little deviation or side trips.
Seems there's a difference between the way you live your life and your career as an artist and your actual practice as an artist.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that in my day-to-day life, when I'm not wearing my artist hat and just being another New Yorker, I think that I am very ordered and have a roadmap for everything. And I think that over the years, I've tried to have the studio be that place where I don't need the roadmap or I don't need that sort of roadmap. So it creates room for error or accidents that can be thrilling or discoveries. Yeah, that's an important part.
But your normal life, you can't have that.
I think that for the normal life, I don't know. I think that it's a little uptight or it's a little less spontaneous. And then the studio becomes this place where spontaneity is okay.
Going back to my earlier question, what would it look like if you had that spontaneity, say when you come to Japan as an experiment?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That's a great idea. I think that implementing it is going to be hard for my brain to wrap around. But I think that is what I love about travel. And that's what I love about embedding myself in new environments and meeting new people is that surprise.
It's just interesting, just as if I make an observation here, you're saying you want to get out of your head when you meet other artists for your practice, but for your normal life, there seems to be a bit of resistance of getting out of your own head. What's behind that?
I think you're right. I think that what's behind that is a sense of a need for stasis and sort of a need for everything to be okay and calm in the normal everyday life. And then the studio can be a wreck and it's enjoyable. And there is for some reason that separation.
To challenge you a bit more here, why can't your normal life be a bit of a wreck and exciting and unusual?
I think it is. I think that it naturally is just being living here, doing the things I do, being a part of the art world I'm a part of here. I think that spontaneity is inevitable, but I might be resistant to it sometimes.
What's behind that resistance?
It's uncomfortable sometimes, pushing the boundaries or letting the boundaries push you. The taking of risks in the studio is maybe a safer place to take risks in the long run.
What would your life look like if you took more risks? Give me some examples.
It would definitely involve growing both my artistic practice and my business. So both sides of my career. And then I think that it would involve taking those leaps of faith, getting the bigger studio, asking that person for a studio visit who I had asked before, and get to it.
What's getting in the way of you doing those two things?
It's an expensive city to live in. It's hard to take the risks, right? It's like easier to be a little bit more comfortable, be a little bit more safe, right? But I think that it is a place where taking those risks can bear a lot of fruit too.
So let's get a bit granular there. What would you need to do to get yourself out of your own head to take those risks and bear the fruit?
Like specific?
Yeah.
Well, I think jumping for studio that I want, I have to move studios soon. And I think that just asking the people that I know, the gallerists, the artists that I admire, the people that have been wanting studio visits for a while, just to come over to the new space, cup of coffee, sit down, talk, and have those interactions that will definitely bear fruit, even if it's just a nice conversation and more insight into each other.
Do you have a pen and piece of paper there?
I do.
Do you want to write down the names of those people? Obviously, don't mention them on the podcast. And just the dates when you are actually going to reach out to them, if you actually do want to do that.
For sure. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah.
I'll wait while you write those down.
Okay.
See a smile on your face there. What's behind that?
Well, I'm used to the therapy format where you like, I know this isn't therapy, but it's, I'm used to there not being a much action approach, taking approaches to these situations. So it's nice. It's a good thing. I like action-based approaches to things because I don't normally do that myself all the time. Okay, I got a handful of names here.
Excellent. And have you got dates of when you're actually going to reach out to them as well?
I do. I have to be out of my old studio in July. So at the end of July. So I think that it has to be either end of July, you know, by the end of July, or if I find that new studio, then right after I move.
And this new studio, have you found it already or are you looking for it?
I'm looking for it right now. Yeah. It's, I'm looking for it now, and then I'll look for it when I get back in July.
So if you have no restraints whatsoever, what would that studio look like? Your ideal studio?
It would be a space where I could do both painting and sculpture. So that means maybe two, you know, divided, either one big divided space or two smaller rooms, you know, a clean area and a dusty area. Room to make molds and use wood shop tools and cleaner area to paint and write emails.
And what's getting in the way of you getting that space now?
Well, I think for scale, I would need to probably share with at least one other person. I've been talking with friends about that and seeing who would want to go in on a space together. And then it's a thing of splitting up the space and doing, you know, walls, dividing walls. Yeah, that's a new daunting thing that I've never done here, which is exciting, but, you know, I'm a little trepidatious about it.
Going back to that fear again.
Yeah, it's the fear of the unknown, right? Or like the fear of the risk. Risks seem much more risky here, but also, you know, again, could bear more fruit here.
Yeah, going back to your own words about abundance, it seems you have no option but to take risks if you want that life of abundance and fruit.
Yeah, I think so. I think that for my goals of like being able to sustain myself as an artist, you kind of have to be a chameleon and you have to shift into doing different things, taking different risks, looking at things differently all the time. And I think that that's important.
And 10 years down the road, where do you see yourself as a successful artist?
I love being in New York, either here or upstate New York is very nice. Alicia and I have built a life in the city here, so it's hard to imagine myself somewhere else. But in terms of the career, I think that I want to be in a place where I can explore and take risks in the studio. And I want to be continuously learning. I don't have these ideas that I'll be, you know, the next Jeff Koons. That's not my goal. I don't want to be that sort of business person in that way. I just want to be able to be comfortable enough to be able to keep making art. It's a big part of how I can filter this world and absorb it.
And how would that life look different to your life now?
I own a fabrication business. And so half of my time is devoted to that. Half the time is devoted to my studio practice, but I run it out of my studio. So I use the wood shop area, the dusty area for that business. And I think that doing a little bit less of that and doing a little bit more of the art thing would be a big goal.
How can we achieve that?
I think it's taking those risks, calling or texting or DMing these people that I wrote down here on this piece of paper and taking those risks, getting them in the studio. I think that a lot of it is up to chance in my mind. But even in that, you still have to take that leap to see if the chance will pick you.
You mentioned Jeff Koons and you don't want to go down the business artist route. But then you're saying you want to do less of the business on your current business side and more on the art and the art side. How can that be feasible?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think that I just meant that maybe that scale wasn't my goal. So like, I don't want to have a huge business. I'd love to be able to a solo show a year at a good gallery, a reputable gallery to help me sustain myself. But I don't think I want 15 assistants and a big warehouse to deal with. It's scale, really.
So you recognize the business aspects of art and you need to go down that route, but not on the scale of Jeff Koons. If we were to play out that lifestyle you want in 10 years this year, what would you need to do differently?
To achieve the smaller scale that I'm desiring?
You said you want like a one gallery exhibition in a reputable gallery a year, and you want that to sustain your business. If we had to do that within this year, what would you need to do?
Having more group shows, finding more galleries that are interested in the work and working with them is a big part of that. And I think that from what I'm learning in the art world, I think that they want to work with you on a few group shows or a show here and there before they say, okay, well, we're going to like rep you or we're going to work with you for longer term. And I have been this year. I just had a 2-person show in the Lower East Side, and that was my first Manhattan show. But doing more of that, I think, is good. Just getting more eyes on the work and more, people to talk to about that.
How can we do more of that apart from getting people down to your studio and you visiting other artists? What more could you be doing?
I mean, I think that this residency is a good opportunity for fostering international dialogues with the work. Alicia and I have talked to people here who have friends in Tokyo, or there's other artists and writers. And I think that just collecting those names and making sure everybody sends their recommendations, I think that that's a big goal. And then asking them out for sushi one day or something like that and getting to know them.
So you've got those names with you now, and you're committing to contacting those people when you go out to Japan.
I am. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. What more could you be doing in Japan?
I think spending time going to galleries in specifically Tokyo, but elsewhere. And a big part of it for me is also just collecting a lot of images and inspiration from the surroundings, from the environment, from the people, from the culture, and bringing that back to the studio and sort of synthesizing that and turning that into new work.
That's on the artistic side. What about the business side to get this lifestyle to sustain where you want to go?
Having the show in Tokyo is great. I think that selling a couple pieces would help sustain more work to be made in the future. I will have to see what's in the show, but I've put forth the proposal for a mixture of paintings, drawings, and sculpture to be in the show. So we'll see what ends up actually in the show. But it's just a very new place. And I'm just now getting to know New York, the art world here. So even though I've almost been here for a decade, but just getting to know that art world. And yeah.
I'm seeing more barriers that you're putting in front of yourself, just as another observation.
What sort of barriers?
You saw me.
You mean barriers in terms of goals or?
Yeah. Like I said, what do you need to do to increase your business? And you got back to the, what, it's a new place. It's that fear thing coming in.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I can be doing this, this, and this, and this. Let's go behind that. What is creating all these barriers for you?
Maybe it's just a lack of knowing how to navigate that specific art world. Like I'm beginning to know how to navigate this world, but like, who do I talk to? I mean, I have a list of names. I'm going to contact them, but I think that getting to know Dexter will be good because he's got a foot in the art world there and can sort of, yeah, I think that part of my goal is learning from him which directions to go, maybe, or what risks might be there to take.
I'm going to make a sentence observation. You tell me if this is right or wrong. The reason why you can't live the life you want to lead as an artist, this life of abundance and fruit, is because you're too stuck in what you know already, your head, as you called it. Whereas if you took the approach you take in the studio, where it's a lot more free and you do take risks, you can be more successful.
I would agree with that. I think that what that looks like is trying to create situations and excuses while in Tokyo, while in Hayama, to be risky and surprise myself and, yeah, experiment, because that's what the studio is for, right? And I think that often I live this internal life in my studio. Why can't that internal life be reflected externally?
So let's get granular. Suppose you're in Japan and the biggest names in the art world in Japan are in one room. What would that risk look like for you?
That risk would look like even just talking to them, getting to know them, having them get to know me, them knowing maybe even just a few sentences about my work and my goals and my aspirations. And if you're ever in New York, come by the studio, right? It's always there. And that's the main thing. And maybe I think that getting to know the community in Japan and the art world there can also help me understand.
So what would be different for that risk compared to what you'd normally do, say, today?
I think today, as of now, that risk I don't usually take. I'll go to the show, I'll go to the opening, I'll go to the gallery, but I'm in and out. You know, I'm like, I look at the work, post it on Instagram, and then I'm gone. And I think that digging in, spending a little bit more time, getting to know people there, the people that make things happen, and yeah, getting to know the process.
What emotion did you feel when you just said that to me?
I don't know. Maybe a little bit of fear, a little bit of trepidation, a little bit of, oh, this is something outside my comfort zone. The social anxiety is sort of cropping up a little bit, but yeah.
Does your heart have something to say when you hear yourself say that?
I think that, yeah, deep down, this is one life, right? And I want to be an artist. And this is, I've always been an artist. I've, you know, from the time when I was really little. And yeah, I think that letting myself take those chances and realizing it's nothing's bad going to happen from that, yeah, is important.
Is there anything stopping you from taking care of yourself in that way for being the artist you wanted to be as a little boy in taking those risks?
The major thing that's in the way is me. If the world is all is mostly chance and I'm out there fishing for all these chances, I need to cast the I don't know. I'm not really a fisherman, so I don't know. But you know what I mean? I need to take that risk and I need to take the leap and put myself out there, because otherwise nothing's going to happen, right? It'll be stasis.
What did you learn about yourself hearing you say that just now?
I mean, I've always known that I've played it safe with my away from studio life, but I think that I've learned through saying that I really do want to take those risks, and it would be beneficial, and it would be, you know, it's what my heart desires, is to continue to be an artist in any way that I can. And
so as we're coming to a close now, what's showing up for you in the conversation we had today that you really want to hold on to?
Knowing that I do really deep down want to take these risks, and that they can be very rewarding and spiritually, philosophically, artistically, in all these ways, knowing that my heart wants that is important.
Excellent. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today before we sign off?
No, I would say that was great. I learned a lot, and thank you for this process.
No problem. Thank you, and very best of luck for your residency.
Thank you.
That was such a fascinating conversation. And like all coaching conversations, I suspect the hard work will happen when Chris goes away and thinks about things like risks and what more he can be doing to stop things that are standing in the way of him fulfilling his ultimate dreams. I'll keep you updated to see where he gets to. Until next time.